Ned Yost was the bullpen coach on the Braves team in 1995. On the Braves staff for years, won a World Series title with the Royals as their manager as well, and he's kind enough to join us now on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Mr. Yost, thanks for coming on, and how's retirement treating you so far?
Well, it's been great. You know, we've enjoyed the downtime, but didn't really expect you know, everybody in the country enjoying, or not, I wouldn't say enjoying, but being a part of the downtime. You know, I was kind of looking forward to watching baseball from afar and really kind of really focusing in on the Braves this year and seeing how they were going to do. And it's been strange in that respect, but you know, it's been nice to just kind of, first time in 65 years I've had a summer off. So, you know, it's a pretty special time.
Hey, Ned, is it okay if I call you a gentleman farmer?
Oh, yeah. I'm growing a garden, which is nice. I live on 550 acres here in Greenville, Georgia, and we farm trees for the most part, but we're real conservation-minded. You know, we've got like 14 food plots for the deer and for the turkeys. We're growing sunflowers for the doves. So, you know, we've got a 30-acre lake in the middle of it, so we can, you know, catch a lot of fish. We can do a lot of outdoor activities here and never really get bored.
You know what strikes me about your resume? I had mentioned this earlier today. When you go to the bullpen, when you're with the Braves in 1991, you basically are there within feet of every guy who's getting ready to make every big start for that run through the 90s. And then the other part, because you move over to the third base coaching job, but the other part is you're also, every time the call comes to the bullpen to get a guy up to try to finish one of those big starts, you're kind of around all these guys getting ready to do that type of work in those types of pressure situations.
Well, yeah, and it was a great experience for me, you know, especially later in my years as a manager, you know, understanding pitching more or less. I mean, I had the opportunity to catch every side session that John Smoltz, Tommy Glavin, and Greg Maddux, Steve Avery, all those kids threw. I'd be down in the bullpen, I'd catch every one early. And watch how they performed, watch how they went about their business, watched how they practiced, watched how special their talents and abilities were, and then to be there in the bullpen with the guys in these situations, you know, was really exciting. You're kind of a world away from the game because you're always out in the outfield somewhere or down the line, but you know, once the fifth inning comes, these guys, it was amazing to watch them lock in. Bobby did such a great job and was a great experience for me to have everybody understand their roles. So, you know, guys would get to the sixth inning, hey, this is my role. We get past the sixth, okay, this is my role. And you'd see guys start to tune their focus in as their inning would start to come and, you know, be ready for any situation that they needed to handle.
Ned Yost is with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Was the bullpen coach of that 95 Braves World Championship team, won a World Series as the manager of the Kansas City Royals in 2015. I want to go back to something you said at the beginning. You were looking forward to watching the Braves this year. The one common thread is it seems like anybody, for the most part, Ned, that has passed through this organization will forever have that special tie to the Braves, and I guess you're one of them, correct?
No, no doubt. I mean, it's a very special tie. It's hard to explain. You know, Dayton is the same way. You know, Dayton grew up in Kansas City, loves the Royals, but still has that special, you know, tie and feeling from being a part of that Braves organization back in those years. And it's a very special feeling. I mean, you always feel, you know, that you were a part of that organization. It's a very, very special organization. And quite frankly, when Dayton and I teamed up together in Kansas City, you know, we tried to emulate as much as we could of what John Schuerholz and Bobby Cox did for the Braves organization. Make it a family. Make it an organization that, is class. They care about people and they play the game right, and it's an organization you can look at and feel proud to be a part of.
Hey, Ned, one of the things you talked about, catching all those side sessions, game day, when a guy would get his game face on, and the idea that some guys, they go to the bullpen at the exact same time every night. What was this group like in terms of those types of things?
Oh, they were all every single one of them, you could tell they were intensely focused. They were, and of course, we've all heard it a thousand times. They were intensely competitive, not only against the league, but against each other. I mean, they wanted to lift each other up. They wanted to support each other. They wanted to do better than the guy did the night before. So they were always prepared. They were always 100%, you know, ready to go. They were all tough guys. You know, they could pitch through little injuries. They could pitch through pain. And, you know, Leo used to call it going to the post. And these guys would do it. But you watch their focus you know, once they'd take that mound and they'd go out and they would just kind of get loose, and they'd kind of look at Leo and say, okay, tell me when we got 7 minutes left, and then all of a sudden, I mean, they turn the fire on. Here it comes. Sha-boom, sha-boom, sha-boom. So it was a great group.
You watch some other talented arms, and I'm not – Jason Schmidt turned out to be a hell of a pitcher, but there were certain guys that I'm sure you saw that had stuff. There's guys all around baseball today that have stuff, but they just can't harness it, can't control it. Can't figure out what to do with it on the days they're not pitching. Can you talk about the fine line between being able to figure that out and being a guy who's a really good pitcher as opposed to a guy who's looking to keep his job?
Right. Well, you're right. And again, talent plays into that, all right? But you can always, you know, make the best out of your talent and ability. And I think, you know, one of Leo's strengths, and Leo had a lot of strengths, but one of his strengths was that he was dogged determined that these guys were going to be able to execute their fastball down and away. And their side sessions, Greg Maddux, Tommy Glavin, John Smoltz, all of them started with executing fastballs down and away. And they would throw 20, 25, 30 fastballs down and away, reduced effort, probably 70% effort, and they would practice executing that pitch. Now, if they were struggling to execute that pitch, they would not move on. They would stay executing fastballs down and away, down and away, down and away. If they threw 10, 12 in a row right there, then they'd spin a couple breaking balls. They'd throw a couple from the windup, and then they would finish up and be done. But nowadays, guys, you know what? I think they are so enamored with spin rates, or they're so enamored with the radar guns that they've lost focus that execution is key. It doesn't matter how hard you throw. Execution is key. And the only way you're going to be able to execute consistently is by practicing it consistently, making it a mindset that I have to have a weapon that I can go to at all times, which is going to be my fastball down and away, and really formulate that as a given in their mind and practice. And that's how guys can get better. That's, if you're great, it's going to make you better. If you're good, it's going to make you better. If you're mediocre, it's going to make you better. If you can execute your fastball down and away. I went over every home run we gave up last year in Kansas City. 93% of the home runs we gave up were on pitches that weren't executed. 7% were. You can eliminate a huge number of home runs with execution, but nowadays, you know, we've kind of gotten away from that execution focus and, you know, more enamored with spin rates and you know, radar gun light up. So I don't know. It kind of got away from, I think, the execution part of it. But this is why these guys are all Hall of Famers. They had great stuff, but they could all execute their pitches.
Ned Yost was the bullpen coach of the 95 Braves, that championship team. We celebrate the 25th year anniversary, won that World Series as the manager of the Royals in 2015. He joins us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. We talked to Dave Justice about a week or so ago. He said he meant what he said, and he said what he meant. He said he probably would have worded it a little bit differently. Now, did the coaching staff have any type of a conversation leading into that Game 6 based on what David Justice had to say?
You know, not that I know of. You know, it was kind of business as usual, I think, for me. And I think what we're talking about is David was talking about the fans getting behind us.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't, you know, for me, we were so focused on the game that, you know, I didn't really pay much attention to the press. But so, I mean, I know I can kind of remember there was some of the fans were upset with what David said, but I don't think David meant it, you know, mean. I just think that, he just thought, you know, we're on the verge of doing something special, wanted the fans to get really, really involved and join in. But he sure backed it up there in that game six with the home run, the only run we scored.
Hey, Ned, we'll finish up with 95. Let's go through a progression of a few things. Do you believe, and I'll tell you who told us that he absolutely believes it was true, do you think there was an air conditioning unit on in Minnesota whenever they were at the plate?
You know what? There was a lot of speculation about that. And if it came out that there was, it wouldn't surprise me a bit.
Terry Pendleton swore. He was in studio with us. We asked him four times in a row. Terry,
I think he brought it up on his own. I don't think it was a part of the initial conversation.
And then he went on record emphatically four more times.
Yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. You know, I wouldn't doubt it one bit. I just, you know, there was big, huge fans behind home plate, and they would go on. Again, we're so focused with the game that I would never really pay attention. But, you know, there was a lot of conversation about that, and it wouldn't surprise me if that was the case.
Let's go through the progression. Was Jack Morris and John Smoltz, and I don't even know if you're able to watch that game. I know you're working down there, but at a certain point, you might as well kick your feet up because Smoltz isn't coming out, or at least he's not going to come out for a while. What do you remember about that game? Like, is that as good a game as you've seen pitched?
Oh, it was great. I mean, I've seen a lot of good games pitched. I mean, I've seen a couple of Verlanders, no hitters. But, you know, in terms of both pitchers, magnitude of the game, I mean, it was unbelievable. The bullpen phone I had to hold, you know, on my chest because it was so loud in that Metrodome, I could not hear the phone ring. So I had to hold it really, really close so that I could feel it and kind of hear it at the same time. But it was amazing to sit back and watch those two guys work. I mean, it was a game to behold for sure.
Avery,
I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again, what Jack Morris did in that game. He wasn't coming out. It didn't matter how long that game was going, Ned. He was not coming out of that game.
No, and you know what? It's crazy because you kind of get back to when we won the World Series. And, I'm trying to think. Their pitcher for the Mets, the Dark Knight.
Matt Harvey.
Matt Harvey would not come out of that game. He did not want to come out of that game, and it ended up burning him.
Uh-huh.
So it just worked out good. But his stuff was phenomenal. You're right. He was not coming out of that game.
And he was a money pitcher. He had been there before. You know, I contend that if it didn't say Braves and Twins across the front of the jerseys, if it was Chicago, L.A., or New York, it would be deemed what it really is, the greatest World Series ever.
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's still a lot of people that think that it was probably one of the greatest World Series
ever. Got to ask you about the 21-year-old Avery and his nuts walking to the mound and what he was able to do at that age.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. I remember we were all pushing for him in spring training for him to make the team, and there was some concern that he might be – you know, too young, and, Bobby was really in his corner. But I'll never forget game six in 91 when we were in Pittsburgh. We needed to win game six, and then Smoltz, of course, came and had a great game seven the next day. But I remember Abe, we were talking about that warm-up, right? Abe walked down, he was getting loose, and he's just throwing the ball. And, again, he told Leo in the bullpen, you tell me when there's 5 minutes to go. And Leo said, all right. So he's throwing the ball probably 60%, and we're getting in deeper into the warm-up, and he's spinning breaking balls, and he's just throwing, you know, just throwing it. And all of a sudden Leo goes, okay, you got 5 minutes to go. He took it. He stepped off the mound, took his hat off, got a towel, wiped off his brow, took a drink of water, got back on the mound, and the fire that was coming out of his arm, I mean, it was like shout, boom, shout, boom. Shot, boom, breaking ball, snap, right, for the last 5 minutes, and he went out on that mound as determined as – and when he left the bullpen, I thought we were in great shape today. And luckily, I think we won that game 1-0. Greg Olson got a base hit in the ninth inning, but Abe was spectacular, and he was right in there. It's a shame that he ended up getting injured because there's no telling what he would have been able to really accomplish if he had some longevity.
Finishing up with Ned Yost on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line, what's going through the staff's mind as you win that championship in 95? Obviously, you're proud. Obviously, you're celebrating. Is there a sense of relief as well that you finally got it done?
Oh, no doubt. It's a huge sense of relief, and it's a I think the sense of relief is as great as the, you know, the feeling of accomplishment. I mean, it was like that in 15. It was like that in 95. And I just remember we won the first two games, went to Cleveland and lost game three. But when we won game four, I remember walking off the field with Jeff Blauser, and we were walking up the steps going to the clubhouse, and he looked at me and he goes, you know what? What? And he goes, we're going to win the World Series. And I thought to myself, you know what? He's right. We're going to win this. We're going to win this. And, of course, we ended up losing game five and then that great game six to win it. But, yeah, it was a huge sense of relief. We were finally world champions, and it was a tremendous feeling, tremendous winner.
Can't let you go without asking. We've all been fortunate enough to get to know a bunch of players to talk about Bobby Cox. And Bobby Cox, absolutely, the only guy I remember him actually throwing under the bus, or at least to some degree, was Kenny Lofton. In that 1 year he was here, he had a little comment about Kenny that was very different from Bobby. Bobby was a player's guy, but Bobby, and he'd defend you, which is why he got ejected from so many games. But Bobby could put a foot up a rear end, and if he closed the door behind you, can you explain a little bit about the way that a guy with only two rules really commanded the respect that he did? And can you also, maybe you give a specific or not, the idea that paint would fall off the walls if Bobby had something he had to tell you in private?
Oh, there's no doubt. And, you know, I've seen Bobby many times. You know, Bobby, people ask me if I had any mentors, and of course Bobby's at the top of the list. You know, I knew going in that if I paid attention to this guy, I would one day have a chance to be a major league manager. For 12 years, I watched everything that he did. And I mean, I would ask him questions. I would, you know, sit with him any chance that I would get to ask questions about bullpen management, about lineup construction. You know, somebody'd be struggling, why don't you move them down? All these questions. But he was intensely competitive, and there were times where we would lose a game, and he would go in his office, and the office would be absolutely torn up. I mean, he'd be throwing coffee mugs. He'd be kicking chairs. He'd be screaming. I mean, he'd be going nuts. I remember one game I can't remember – how we lost or what happened. I just remember Bobby was just really upset, and just you could hear bash, boosh, and he's screaming, boosh, bash. And I remember walking into his office the next day, and there was a coffee mug sticking out of the wall. But he was intensely competitive. And the thing about Bobby is once he got it out, he never held a grudge, ever. It didn't matter how bad you messed up. And if he would chew you out, I mean, you would – I mean, it would be a chewing. There would be times where it would be a real, you know, butt chewing. But when it was over. And he'd walk in the next day, and guys would be scared. And he goes, Bobby, hey, how you doing? You doing good today? And guys loved him. They respected him. They understood that he was as competitive as they were, wanted to win as much as they did, had their back in everything that they did. But, you know, if you messed up, you were gonna hear it for the most part. And he expected you to hustle. He expected you to play the game with class and respect your opponents and respect the game. I mean, those were all givens that he expected from you. So
it is amazing that two things beyond time, respect the uniform. And by respecting the uniform, that's big picture, respect the game. But that was it. Guys have told me for decades, that's it. He told you there's two ways you can play here. Be on time and respect the uniform.
Yeah. And there's no doubt. And he showed me, I think, watching him, that, you know, players wanted to be able to respect each other. They wanted to be able to respect the coaching staff, and they wanted discipline. And if you provide discipline for them, they'll follow. And that's what Bobby did. Bobby, you know, had your back at all times, but, you know, he had that discipline. He expected you to play a certain way. And, you know, you better play that way or there's going to be problems.
Well, Ned, we appreciate you looking back and talking about 95 and oh, so much more. Enjoy retirement. Enjoy the garden, the animals and everything else. And hopefully we can talk again somewhere down the road.
Sounds good, guys. Thank you. I appreciate it. You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Ned.
You do the same. Ned Yost, bullpen coach on that 95 Braves championship team, kind enough to join us this morning.
I know you want to do it.
Security Systems Newsmaker.
Go ahead.